I'm Kim Carson. I'm so happy you found my podcast, Conversations with Kim. Whether I'm having a conversation with a celebrity, an author, history maker, record breaker, or the average everyday person, we all have a story to tell. And maybe that story just might change another person's life. We can learn so much from each other. Let us discover some of life's most valuable lessons with today's guest on Conversations with Kim. Today, my conversation is with author James Duane. He's a Harvard College and Harvard Law School graduate and a professor at Regent Law School. His latest book is creating some buzz. It's titled, You Have the Right to Remain Innocent. He explores actual case histories of innocent men and women exonerated after decades in prison, all because of information they voluntarily gave to the police. Thank you so much for talking to me today, James.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure.
So first off, why did you write this book? I mean, tell me about your life's background. What brought you to this place?
Well, my main reason for writing this book, quite frankly, was my severe frustration with the fact that our nation convicts way too many innocent people. I mean, how often do you pick up the newspaper and you read about some unfortunate palooka who just got let out of prison with a profuse apologies because DNA just proved that he was innocent all along of some crime that he was convicted of 20 or 30 years earlier? And it's happening way too often. And unfortunately, when it does happen, most of the time, we just give him a little bit of an apology. We say we're terribly sorry. We'll try and make sure it doesn't happen again. And then we move our attention back on to Brangelina.
Yeah, right, exactly.
We need to call a timeout, a national timeout. And we need to ask ourselves some difficult, soul-searching questions about why in the world are we doing this? Why are we convicting so many innocent people? I mean, because it's not a question that, you know, that is inherently speculative. We know for a fact why it's happening and how it's happening. Comprehensive, careful studies have been done. People have gone back, including me and others, looking at the trial transcripts of these people who are innocent and falsely convicted. And we go back and we look at the transcript and the trial. We say, okay, what happened to this guy? Why was he convicted? And there's several different explanations, truth be told. But one of the most important parts of the puzzle is the unfortunate fact that about a third, nearly a third of these people, these false convictions, were people who made or allegedly made a statement that was used to help convict them. It might not have been an outright confession. You know, it just might have been they admitted that they were there or that they knew the guy.
Well,
or,
that's just it. I mean, reading this, your book is so scary because I can see, like any law-abiding citizen, talking to the police, thinking they're not guilty or anything. You know, like, what's the big deal?
Sure.
But it is a big deal. You say don't talk to the police. Explain.
That's exactly right. And by the way, the mindset you described a moment ago is the biggest part of the problem.
Right, right.
The average man or woman on the street foolishly but understandably thinks, well, you know, if I know in my heart I've done nothing wrong,
right,
then surely there's no way this can go badly for me. There's no need for me to worry about, I've got nothing to hide, as you said, so well, I'll go ahead and talk to these people, of course. But there's so many different ways that this could go wrong. And the other half of the problem, I guess you might say, is that the police know exactly what you're thinking. They
right.
know. They've dealt with countless other people just like you. And they know that the natural reaction of most unsuspecting people in that situation is to think, well, I better cooperate with the police. I better play along with him because he's my friend.
Yeah.
And he acts like he believes me, which may be an act, by the way. And he acts like he's got an open mind, which also may be an intentional deception, by the way. And so I'll go ahead and I'll tell him everything. And then, tragically, far too many of these people find out later they've just made the biggest mistake of their life.
Yeah, and you say that, you know, and I didn't know this. I didn't. Why would I? You talk about how the police can lie. I mean, it's okay to do that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I'm sure. I guarantee you that if your listeners read this book, and they should.
Yeah, they should.
One of the biggest surprises in this book for all of them, for most of them at least, is going to be, wow, I had no idea that it was that easy for the police to get away with lying to me about what's going on and why they're doing what they're doing. It probably comes as an astounding surprise because most of us, you know, we've grown up, we're accustomed to the idea that if the guy who sells you a sandwich or a shoe is guilty of fraud and swindling you into buying something that isn't exactly what he said it was, he can go to jail for that. And there are serious criminal penalties for almost anybody else for lying to you on the job.
That's true.
But not the police. Not the police. The police, in radical contrast, are the only members of our society who are trained, professionally trained, and constantly encouraged to come up with new and more sophisticated methods of dishonesty and deception to trick you into giving up your rights, including your right to life and liberty. It's an unspeakably perverse that some of the most momentous decisions are being made in the context of cases where you're up against somebody who's acting like your friend when he knows all the while he's nothing of the sort.
Right.
And as I explained in the book, by the way, and so I want to make sure I clarify, I'm not in any way insinuating that police officers are, by and large, generally dishonest or more so than most people. They're not. I'm just talking about the way the legal system is designed to work and the way they're trained at the police academy and the way the courts are constantly encouraging them to conduct interrogations and investigations.
Right. And you know, I'm just curious, James, how has law enforcement received your book?
Well, a little early to say, a little too soon to say. I mean, the book has only come out a couple of days ago.
Didn't you say in there that these are things that law enforcement tell their own family?
Well, yes, that's right. I mean, the message that's in the book, I can tell you about that. I mean, the message that's reflected in the book was the subject of a video that I put on YouTube about 8 years ago, and it's been seen there by much, much more than 10 million people. And I have gotten countless, many, many hundreds of letters and emails about that video over the last 8 years, many of them coming from people who claim that they are police officers or former police officers, and not more than maybe one or two of them at most have ever said, well, you know, you're being actually quite misleading. You're leaving out a significant part of the explanation. No. Virtually 100% of them say no. You know, some of them aren't happy that I'm letting the cat out of the bag.
Yeah,
and they're irritated that I'm making their job a little bit more difficult.
But even they
admit, well, but what you say, it's all true.
Yeah.
And I've debated about this subject in public with various police officers and various prosecutors. And when I have, every time, it turns out really not to be much of a debate because the other side says, well, actually, that's all true.
You know, I had a friend who did commercials for attorneys, TV commercials, and he had many of the attorneys tell him, you know, you just never want to end up in a courtroom, even if you're not guilty, because it really can go either way.
Oh, sure it can. It's a real crapshoot. You don't know what you're up against. You know, a small part of the problem, not the biggest part of the problem, but a small part of the problem is the fact that when you agree to give information to the police, you are placing your very life literally in the hands of prosecutors and who may or may not be ethical, and jurors who may or may not be intellectually very sophisticated. I'm not trying to denigrate jurors by and large. I hope and pray that most of them are reasonably respectable intellects who do a reasonably diligent job of trying their best to carefully and objectively assess the evidence.
But, you know, like they have those...
We know that's not how it always happens. And we know that sometimes jurors fall for arguments that are illogical and fallacious, but to them it seems to make sense.
Yeah, and I don't know what the proper name is, but the person who kind of puts the jury together by picking, you know, someone who kind of psychologically does the breakup and the makeup of people. And sometimes you put different people in that mix together. Things may not turn out how you thought that they were going to turn out. And you say don't talk to the police. And so when and where do you stop talking?
Oh, where and when?
Yeah.
You
get pulled over in a car. What do you do?
Oh, well, if it depends why you're getting pulled over in a car. If it's a route, I mean, this book is not mainly about routine traffic stops, and I
right.
think so in the book. That's a different situation entirely for a bunch of obvious reasons. And the biggest difference, of course, is the fact that when it comes to routine traffic infractions, the police have much, much greater discretion as to whether to go ahead and give you a ticket or maybe let you off with a warning this time.
Yeah, I mean, but so
it behooves you to get on their good side and to be polite and courteous and so forth.
Right. Yeah. Okay. You talk about being silent while talking to the police, how it's not viewed by our justice system. When you're silent now, it's viewed as guilt. And has it always been that way?
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. In fact, it was never that way until very recently. Just about exactly 50 years ago, in fact, the United States Supreme Court stated emphatically and took it as self-evident that it would be not just unfair, but unconstitutional and illogical to invite a jury to conclude that a guy was probably guilty of a crime because he didn't want to answer some questions about it. And therefore, the court held that you can't tell the jury that he took the Fifth Amendment, and they'll never know about it, and so it can't be used against you. But just in the past several years, the federal courts, including the Supreme Court, have handed down some unspeakably horrible and horrifying rulings that go exactly in the opposite direction. One of them was a case decided by the Supreme Court just 3 years ago, when the Supreme Court did a quick about-face and suddenly announced for the first time that, well, no, actually there are cases, certain cases, where it does seem to us that it ought to be allowed, ought to be fair and logical to insinuate to the jury, to tell the jury that he took the Fifth, and also to invite the jury to use that against him as evidence that he's guilty, which is unspeakably horrible. It's unspeakably horrific because it reduces the Fifth Amendment privilege almost to meaninglessness. Because the right to remain silent is almost worthless if you can't exercise it without effectively giving the police information that they can then use to convict you in lieu of real evidence.
Right. Today, my conversation is with James Duane. You have the right to remain innocent. So is our younger generation at a greater risk, you know, coming up in this?
Yes, I sure they are, without a doubt. I'm not saying, by the way, that this is necessarily true of, you know, the so-called millennial generation or the young folks these days. That may or may not be true. I don't know and don't have an opinion about that. But young folks generally, of every generation, are probably most at risk, even if only because they're younger. And that makes them, as you would suspect, much more easily coerced or tricked or deceived or frightened. And those are four of the most common ways in which police officers regularly get both the young and the old to make damaging admissions, or if not a confession outright, at least to share information that can be then used to help convict them.
Yeah, and you know, we talked about remaining silent, and you say instead of exercising your right to remain silent, you should exercise your Sixth Amendment. And that is, how do you say that to an officer and what happens? I mean, how do you do that? How's that presented? What does that look like?
Well, luckily it's not hard to do. The Sixth Amendment refers to your constitutional right to the assistance of attorney in your defense. The Sixth Amendment is not nearly as well known as the Fifth Amendment, and that's for the simple reason that, as I told you a minute ago, up until 3 years ago, everybody who knew about the legal system assumed that the Fifth Amendment was all you need. If you want to tell the police why you're not going to answer the question, you just tell them, I'm taking the Fifth.
Yeah.
That used to be a risk-free gambit. Now that's no longer true, as I said in the book, as I explained in the book. So now the Sixth Amendment is now, I guess we might say, more important than ever before. The Sixth Amendment gives you the right to a lawyer. So what you should say instead to the police is not that I'm afraid that the answers might incriminate me, because that sounds way too much like a confession.
Right.
Especially if you're slightly misquoted.
Yeah.
You know, if you tell the police officer, I respectfully decline to answer because I'm concerned that if you say to the police, if you quote the Fifth Amendment and you say, I respectfully wish to exercise my constitutional right against self-incrimination, heaven help you if the police officer, 7 months later at your trial, his imperfect memory gets the best of him, and he tells the jury, yeah, he told me he didn't want to answer my question because Kim said that that if she told me the truth, she'd be admitting that she committed a crime.
Right.
She told me that the truth would incriminate her.
Right.
It only takes a very slight rewording of the privilege to turn a valid exercise of a constitutional right into what looks like a confession.
Yeah, language. I mean, who has perfect memory? And I know you got to go. I got one more. I have one more question. Okay, so here's my thing. I imagine, you know, listening, if someone's listening to the podcast on the air, I imagine a person of color listening to this saying, yeah, that might work for you, but I do that and I could get shot or beaten down. What do you say to that?
Well, I wish I could say that those fears were totally illegitimate and unfounded, but they're not. I mean, the reality is, I mean, we all hope and pray that the risk of a deadly encounter or the illegal use of violent force by a police officer, we hope and pray it's going to be extraordinarily rare. But nobody can deny that at least once in a while it does happen, and nobody can objectively deny that those risks are at least sometimes elevated if you're a member of a racial minority.
Yeah.
So what do you got to do in that situation? You got to make sure that you don't do anything that could be interpreted or misinterpreted by the officer as a sign of contempt or disrespect or anything that might look like a sudden dangerous movement. Make sure he can see your hands at all times. Make sure you don't do anything that looks like you're lunging toward the glove compartment or lunging toward anything that might be a firearm. And tragically, I mean, I wish I could say that's all you need to do, but recent experience confirms that even people in that situation, at least rarely, sometimes found themselves the victim of illegal, lethal force by the police.
Yeah, it just breaks my heart. I used to live next door to somebody whose son is cute as a button. He's 14, he's black, and she said I had to have that conversation with him. Like, if you have an encounter with the police, just do everything he says. And he goes, well, what if he's wrong? And she goes, don't worry about it. I want my son to be alive. I just, we'll fight it later. We'll go to court with it later. But this is a great book. This is such a great book. I'm going to go back and read it again.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, James Duane, you have the right to remain innocent. Do you have a website or anywhere someone can reach out to you?
Sure, yes. Well, Amazon.com.
And I'll put that link up, too, where
Amazon,
you can get the book.
Publisher of the book. And if you go to Amazon and search for You Have the Right to Remain Innocent, you can read a lot more about the book, and you can also read a lot more about me and my background, and you can also find the links to some articles that I've written about the Fifth Amendment that you can download for free. So I definitely recommend that people want to read a little bit more, take a look at that as well. And if they want to contact me, they can reach me through my website at Regent University School of Law in Virginia Beach, where I'm on the faculty.
Yeah, that sounds great. And I will have the link to the Amazon site so they can purchase as well as that. James, thank you so much. You have a great one. I know you got to go.
Okay, great.
Take care.
Thanks.
Bye.
Good talking. It's been a pleasure.
You too. You've been listening to Conversations with Kim. Reach out to me, Kim Carson, via social media. On Instagram and YouTube, Kim Carson Now. I'm also on Facebook and Twitter, Kim Carson. Listen to my radio show middays on WLAV.com. And each Wednesday, I join the Hot Topics chat segment, 9 a.m. Eastern Time, on ABC's Take 5 and Company on WZZM13.com. Listen to more episodes at kimcarson.podomatic.com. Until we meet again, thanks for listening to my podcast, Conversations with Kim.